Hello, cyclocross friends, and welcome to episode 99 of Crosshairs Radio. 99. Have you bought your tickets for the gala for the 100th episode of Crosshairs Radio? There isn't a gala. Just made that up. Anyway, thanks for tuning in, and we are looking forward to that 100th episode gala, or no gala. We should have a gala. Why isn't anybody making those preparations? Hey, this is another TDDTIE. Mr. David Palin and Scott Diedenbach will be joining me shortly to talk about everything that happened in the world of cyclocross in the past week. Before we get to that, I need to let you know that this episode, like all of our episodes in recent memory, is brought to you by Health IQ. And Health IQ is your choice for life insurance. What you need to do, go to healthiq.com/cxhairs. Fill out you take a test. It's actually a fun test. It's a test about bikes and cycling and that kind of stuff. And I think you all will do really well because you are well-informed cycling aficionados. We're going to ace this test. Once you do that, they'll be able to get you lower rates on your life insurance. Life insurance, something that you probably don't think about if you don't already have it. And, you know, it's not something that's fun to think about, but something that you need for your family and your loved ones. And using Health IQ will get you lower rates. So do that. They're all over the news right now. They're getting great reviews. You know, they're taking a startup approach to it, a sort of Silicon Valley tech company approach to some old dinosaur-like life insurance and doing it differently. So go check them out. That is healthiq.com/cxhairs. Fill out the survey. Get involved with them. They will continue to support us, and then we can continue to ramble on about cyclocross. I also want to tell you about a race that is happening in my area, the Mid-Atlantic, one of my favorite races of the year, kind of the end of the season party for us, middle of December in the Mid-Atlantic. It's put on by a really cool bike shop, Bike Kinetic, and their team, Bike Kinetic, and they put on this cyclocross race that they call it Bike Kinetic Cross. But they spell it Bike Kinetic 666. So that's what I'm going with. And I'm going with three sixes now because I think that's cool. It's the number of the race. Bike Kinetic 666. That should be their shirt. Guys, get on that. That's your next t-shirt. Anyway, you all should go to this race. It's a little different. They got a little bit of everything. First of all, and I know that there are other races out there with pirate ships, but this is the pirate ship to end all pirate ships. How is it that we're have competing pirate ships now in races? But anyway, come to this race. There's a pirate ship. It's at Camp Snyder. It's in Virginia. There's equal payouts for women's and men's races, masters or single speed. There's $20 preems. There's a $20 preem for the first one to ride the starboard run-up. That has to do with the pirate ship. Crooked Run Beer Galleon, presented by Clarendon's Beach Shack. Come on. It's a party. Last year, it was extremely cold. It's not going to be cold, as cold, and we still had an awesome time. We're going to have even more fun this year. I want you all to be there. You need to go to bikereg.com/bikekineticx666. Actually, it's just BIKENETICX. Pre-reg closes Thursday night, December 7th. There is a free pre-ride day. That's pretty cool. You can go out to Camp Snyder on December 9th, Saturday, December 9th, noon to 2. And thanks to Moore, who will be out there accepting cash donations to support local trail building, Moore is sponsoring this pre-ride. So, Saturday, December 9th, head out to Camp Snyder in Virginia. Go ride the course and come back December 10th. Hang out. Get the opportunity to win not one, but two separate bikes. They're going to have lottery cards and what they call the happy humps. It's crazy. It's just nuts. That's one of the features there, but they got these cards. You grab the cards, and then you will be eligible Well, their U15 racers will be eligible for a Raleigh RX24, and then everybody else will be eligible to win a Nerve Belmont Fixie. You can be one of the Fixie kids. So that's cool. But yeah, come out, join me for this race. I'll be out there announcing along with my buddy Nate. BikeReg.com/BikeKinetic, BikeNeticX, December 10th, BikeKinetic 666. See you out there. All right. Mr. David Pallon, Scott Diedenbach, we're going to do the show. We're going to do that right now. And I, you may ask why, Scott Diedenbach, as you just did, ask why I would be playing 99 Luftballons in the background.
Uh-huh.
Because it's Crosshairs Radio episode 99.
Ah, forgot about that.
We're one away.
Didn't you put something up in between the last one we did?
No.
That I didn't listen to?
I was...
Oh!
I just caught up on all the videos, man, over on YouTube.
Yeah, I saw your comments.
I like the voiceover better than the cards.
Oh, good. Okay.
Yeah,
that's good to hear.
I think it just keeps it. It's not like a stop. The cards kind of make a break, whereas this, it just keeps flowing and you just keep going with it. I really, yeah. When Tim was yelling to Powers, come on, Spencer's teammate.
That's good. If folks haven't seen those yet, go to youtube.com/CXHairs, and then they're all there.
Be in the show.
I've already recorded. This is the show.
Oh man! Oh my goodness! You're taking this no start, no intro to extremes now, man.
I even said I was starting to record.
I heard that.
Yeah. See?
And I forget you never edit anything.
Mr. David Pallon's on it. Hey, Scott.
Yeah.
Hey, listen.
Yeah. I can hardly hear that. Now you're gonna break my rule and make me edit stuff out.
That's Toto, man. That's Toto, 99.
Jeez. Scott, I can't wait to hear what next one's gonna be. Yes, Bill.
Welcome everyone to the show.
All right, we are back for another edition of...
Oh, come on. This time with feeling.
With feeling, yeah.
I know you're feeling a little under the weather, but you know...
My feeling is crap right now. All right, here we go. Are you ready? Back with another edition of They Don't Do That in Europe with me, as always, on the left, Bill Shiken.
Hey, Scott, how are you?
I'm great. And on the right, Mr. David Pallon.
Vitamin C, my friend, vitamin C.
Where have you been, man?
Oh,
David, what do you got going on this weekend? Tell us about it.
You know, I thought we'd go at the end how people can get in touch with us. But
yeah,
I will be in Ohio and coming from Ann Arbor down to Columbus. So trying to fly in under the radar for that. But I'll be making the call for the Ohio State Age Group National State Championships.
That's going to be great. That's going to be awesome.
I'm really excited. I got a question
for you with that. So it's just, there's no open?
No. That was actually already held.
They're at a different, the state championships for Ohio is at two different locations?
Yeah. This is age group and single speed.
It's just like worlds.
Wow.
Yeah, indeed.
We do it all together. Multiple states.
I think most places do, don't they? I mean, even like Colorado does it all together, don't they? I don't know. Someone from Colorado.
Maryland, Delaware, and then they kind of throw in D.C. too. But
So you race together and then parse out your state champions?
Yeah.
Wow.
That's a great podium right there.
Twice I have been a state champion. Once getting third and the other time getting fourth, because the people in front of me, the best was when I was like the 40 plus state champion, because the three people in front of me not only weren't from Maryland or DC, but they were older than me. So they were too old to be in that category.
So in a way, that was good.
Yeah.
Talk about not knowing who you're racing against.
Yeah. Well, it's one of those things that I didn't, I had no idea until I looked at it and they were like, oh yeah, you're state champion. And I'm like, yeah.
I love it. I love it. And Bill, tell us about, you just got back from Japan. Don't tell us about the race. We'll talk about that. But like, how was the trip?
The trip was awesome. It was good. It was a bit of travel.
Yeah, I might say.
But you know, coming home, I got to do Monday twice. So that was good. One of those Mondays was spent on a plane and the other, well, almost both of them.
The other was spent sleeping.
Somebody had a case of the Mondays.
Yeah, but this was cool. So a couple, I guess the beginning of 2016, I went to Tokyo for the Tokyo Cross. And then, and that was one experience. And then this one was the Nobeyama race, which is like by train, 4 hours from Tokyo.
Whoa. Is that like the bullet train?
No.
High-speed train or just regular rail?
Well, I can, here, let me actually just ended up writing this all up, my whole thing. You start out, Mr. David Pound. You get on to the you get to the Narita Tokyo Airport, and then you get on the Narita Express train to Shinjuku. Okay.
Okay.
At Shinjuku, you switch to the Super Asuza number 29 and take that to Kofu.
Oh man!
And do you have pictures of what the Japanese words look like?
Those two were easy. Those two weren't that bad. Although
another one.
Although Chris Namba, who was the mechanic for Squid Bikes, was showing me that for Google Translate, there's actually a camera.
That's a great idea.
You can actually, if you have the Google Translate app and you push the little camera icon, you can like put your camera on different signs and it will translate them to English. Just overlays the English word over the Japanese word, which is pretty amazing. Anyway, but you get to Kofu and then you have to switch to more of a local line, which is the Chuo line. And then you're taking that to Kobijizawa. And that is the difficult one, Mr. David Pound, because the Japanese commuter trains, unlike the metro or any subway you've been on, immensely quiet. Like, everybody's just doing their own thing. Nobody's talking. So quiet, there isn't even a PA announcement. You just, like, roll into a station. The doors don't even open. There's a little button there that if you want to get out, you have to hit the button, and then the door opens and you leave, and then it closes and you go to the next station. I was like 6 or 7 stations away on this thing, and that was like the most stress I think I felt all week, because I was like, I had out my phone and I had like the transit map on my phone. I'm like counting down stations and I'm looking at the characters, man. And I'm like, yeah, okay, no, that looks it. And like all the platforms are dark, so I'm like squinting to see where the sign is and then rolling to the next one. You know, and the one warning I got was like, don't fall asleep.
Because
people will, not that anything will happen to you, but it's so quiet that you'll just be at the end of the line. And then it's like, you know, you're in rural Japan somewhere and who knows if a train's coming back in the other direction or when. So, yeah, but I got there. Okay.
So you couldn't rely on the services of one Tim Johnson to get you around?
He was already there.
He didn't come and meet you at the station and come get you at the airport?
He did not. You know, he did not. I basically arrived after about 28 or 29 hours of travel. He was like, hey, let me show you where our room is right now, first thing, because I'm going to sleep. I'm like, okay.
Yeah, so am I.
But I got a ride from the station. But no, Tim actually showed up, and on that day, instead of taking the train, he actually had a Cannondale ride from Tokyo to Nobeyama that took him like 8 hours.
Wow. That was like a group ride that they organized?
Yeah, and it was a, how can I say this politely? All levels.
No draw.
No drop, all levels.
Challenging. Pigeons. Challenging terrain. Like I saw some of the pictures. It was snowing. The roads were icy. They were like dirt and gravel. Yeah, it was.
And dude, in your videos, there's like it's like in the mountains and stuff. Yeah, man. It's not like.
Oh yeah, no. Yeah. I woke up the next morning after getting there, and it's, you know, like Celsius. It's like -2. I'm like, okay.
But great cross stuff, man.
Yeah, we'll talk about it more, but it's just the whole layout and the whole scene, just really super impressive, and a different feel than I got on at Tokyo race, which is more of an exhibition. This is just, you know, in the middle of their season, and yeah,
that more of just a local kind of flavor to it a little bit.
But just, you know, it reminded me of our UCI races here. You know,
It looked like a C2 here. I mean, as far as the setup of it and stuff, you know, single ribbon, you know, on wood stakes, you know, laying out the cores and stuff. And yeah, cool. That's awesome. Well, yeah, we'll talk more about that after we get through our two races that we have to talk about.
Yeah.
Are you guys ready?
Yes.
We're starting in order. We'll start with the World Cup in Zeven. Of course. Did you guys get to watch this?
I did.
Yeah.
Did you get to see it, Bill?
I did, yeah. What did we... For this one, we were able to see no problem without any geo-restriction. For the next race, I actually had to use my VPN to the U.S.
to get the Trek feed.
To the U.S. to get the Trek feed, yeah.
Oh, I remember that. That's funny. That is funny. Well, yeah, I think this the new like nickname for the Zeven course is going to be "Don't line up on the left." Did you guys notice that every single field crashed on that first right after the start? They hit that first right, and the left side of the field crashed every single race.
Yeah,
I was just texting Alex Morton, and he was telling me about his crash. I'm like, "Did you line up on left?" He's like, "Yeah." I'm like, "Mm-hmm." Every single field, so.
Now, he didn't have the benefit of watching every other race ahead of his as he raced early.
Yeah, he was in the junior race, so they were the first ones to crash. So,
yeah.
Do you guys want to give some results here?
Yeah.
Yes.
Sure. Yeah. Well, yeah. Where do you want to start?
Since we just mentioned the junior race, let's talk about the juniors. First place was Pim Ronhaar. Second place, Thomas Kopecky. Third place, Mies Hendricks. Fourth place, Loris Rullier. Fifth place, Jarno Bellens. Woo, all five different nationalities. Oh, no, I'm sorry. Two Dutch riders, but so four different nationalities in the top five. For the Americans, in eighth place was Scott Funston. In 12th place was Alex Morton. 13th place, Calderwood. 33rd place, Ben Gomez Villafana. So, first race. It's actually Villafana, right?
That's better, yeah.
There we go. So first race for a lot of the first World Cup race for a lot of these American juniors, you know, and a pretty good showing, I think. You know, like I said, there's a lot. They were involved in the crash. Alex was for sure, and still races back. He was basically last, races through the whole field and gets 12th. So I think that's a good sign. We got a good good group of U.S. juniors here. But Pim Ronhaar, you know, he's just been crushing it this year. I looked at his lap times. He's the only rider in the field to not have a single lap that was over 9 minutes. Everyone else had low 9 minute laps. He did not have a single lap above 9 minutes.
Yeah.
So, he's dominant
the real deal
this year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. So, all right. I wish we would have got to see that, but we didn't. So men U23 first place was Eli Easterby. Second. This is basically the, what happens when Thomas Pidcock does not show up race. First place, Eli Easterby. Second place, Thies Aerts. Third place, Thomas Joseph. Fourth place, Yannick Peters. Fifth place, Joshua Dubau. It's a French name. I'm not sure. How would that be pronounced?
I,
Input, you guys.
I don't know. All I know is that somehow on my new computer, the sounds from my texts are still on, and that's annoying.
But Easerbeat, you know, again, when Pidcock's not, it's Pidcock and Easerbeat. I think that's what's going to come down to at the end of the season.
What about
here,
our,
you know,
what about our man Jens Dekker?
Oh, and Jens, I shouldn't forget Jens. Yes, absolutely. You know, he got 10th in this race.
He said he did not have a good race. Speaking of Jens, we can get to this a little later. He sent us a letter catching up on the past 2 months.
Whoa. We're going to read that one
out?
Is
it like 7 pages?
No, but it's there's bullet points.
Oh.
I like bullet points.
Did you want to cover those?
Yeah, I mean,
or do you want to wait and do a whole show just on it?
I think we can just get
better than anything we're going to come up with.
Well, we can just get through this and then we can come back and just sort of like work through these before we move on to our next.
That sounds awesome.
We'll put it on the agenda. I'm sorry. I should have had this on the lesson plan. I didn't send it.
Didn't get a lesson plan today.
No, I was kind of bummed.
Americans in the U23, 17th was Grant Elwood, 20th was Eric Bruner, 21st was Mac Chance, and 32nd was Denzel Stevenson. So that's that group right there. Now, on to the races that we got to see. Let's talk about the women's race. In the women's race, first place was Sonny Kant, second place Helen Wyman, third place Katie Compton, fourth place Katarina Nash, and fifth place Sophie DeBoer. This was kind of another Kant-Wyman duel. We've seen a couple of those now. I thought it was really good, and this really well, Helen is just really crushing it here at the end of the season as we get closer to February, right?
And she kind of predicted that early in the season too, didn't she? At the when she wasn't performing really well in the hot dry stuff, she said, "I am kind of looking forward to late season stuff where it gets muddy and messy."
Yeah, it's really interesting because it seemed like in the last couple of years she definitely, you know, I mean, granted last year she was injured and she'd be up there in some of the smaller races, but I don't know. Well, I mean, I guess she was sort of always sort of podium-ish, but she's like fighting for the win every weekend, it seems like.
I think, do you think part of it is because as we get into the muddier races, there is more running? And she's such a good runner. I mean, I think that has something to do with it, at least. I think it's part of her plan overall, but I think her ability to run even, you know, helps her even more in those kind of races. So, Americans in this race, American women, third was Katie Compton. 11th was Katie Keough. 12th was Rebecca Ferringer. 18th, Ellen Noble. 22nd, Ellie Anderson. 26th, Courtney McFadden. 33rd. Crystal Anthony, and 42nd was Arlie Kammerer. Tons of American women over there. That was so awesome to see.
Yeah, I think, and that? For Compton, you know, even though she had a really nice result, I think that for her, still not feeling 100% healthy, and then on top of that, it's now her World Cup campaign isn't really what she wanted, so I think they are really almost back-burnering that. And concentrating more on the DVV as the A race of the weekend so that she got points is good and it gets her back on the front row. But I think at a certain point in this race, she wasn't going to, you know, burn all of her matches because the race the next day was the more crucial one for her, at least for season goals.
I completely agree with you.
At this point, she also, I think, may be thinking longer term towards world championships, too.
Yeah. Especially how it's, you know, Valkenburg, man, that's a course that she's always done well on.
Yep.
Yeah,
it plays
for sure.
To her strengths.
Yep.
That said, the women raced 51 minutes. The winning time
about
was
that,
51
David,
minutes, 30 seconds, and... As far as I know, I didn't get a complete report, but as far as I know, there were no uteri that had fallen out on the course that had to be cleaned up at the end.
Now, did they also have to do that over big barriers?
They did. Can you believe that?
Goodness.
They didn't even go with the junior barriors.
What are they doing?
How about that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, if they could only get paid equal for that equal work. Equal
yeah, right?
Time.
I know. exactly. No, I think that's, and I believe Helen Wyman had some comment about that, how she was pretty happy to see that. And then again, I really think it is more and more support for the argument that everyone should be doing 50 minutes.
Yeah, I agree. Men and women, a cyclocross race should just be 50 minutes, period. Yeah. We don't and get away from all this.
Yeah, it doesn't need to be.
At this level. Yeah. You know, at smaller races, of course, you know. But at this level, everybody races 50 minutes. I agree. There's two riders I want to talk about. In 35th place, Bill, do you know who I'm going to mention?
I do not.
Stephanie Paul, first German.
No. Oh,
this is
okay.
This is your responsibility.
That I'm is. You're right. Slack. Thank you.
That's why I asked you. But the other rider I want to mention in 19th place, okay, is Celine Del Carmen Alvarado. Okay. She is 19 years old. She is consistently at age 19, she is consistently podiuming in the U23 women's field all season long at 19 years old. She's really good. I just wanted to point her out, talk about her now, because I think going to be looking at her as we get closer to Worlds, and I think people should be paying attention to her. So
cool. Check
her out.
Did I say
19th? She was in 14th overall.
14th place, 19 years old.
Yeah. All right. Yes. So watch out for her.
Scott Dean Box, Riders to Watch.
That's right.
New feature. Well, they don't do that in Europe.
Well, she's one of those riders. It's like, you notice, I've been noticing her on the podium all year. And then finally you're just like, okay, this is legit, man. She's really good. So, I'm hoping to see more of her come world. So,
nice.
In the men's, anything else you guys wanted to mention about the women's race?
I can't. No, not that I can remember right now.
All right, we'll move on to
it later.
If you think of anything, just bring us back to it. For the men's race, first place, Wout van Aert. What?
Who is this?
Second place, Matthew Vanderpool. Third place, Tone Aerts. Fourth place, Corne van Kessel. Fifth place, Michael Vanthernout. This race was crazy. First of all, Vanderpool's has that mechanical, and while he is having that mechanical, his name is, like, I'm losing his name. Who was it that crashed right there while he was, that hit the pole with his knee and then went flying across the course?
Oh, yeah. With a B there. Michael Borrow. Yep.
Yes. Yeah, I think that's it. Yes.
Ricocheted Borrow. Knee off of one
that
side.
That knee went into that post. So, like, he snapped a wooden post.
Oh, my goodness. I tweeted out, I was watching, I'm like, what is happening here? This just looks like chaos.
I mean, he was inches away from tromboning him.
One of the things, so as most people probably know, Matthew Vanderpool has a mechanical that actually delayed him for quite a while. I mean, a lot of riders passed him.
He was in He's like 31st place after his mechanical.
Yeah, I mean, way back in the field. And then decides and proceeds to basically ride back through every single person except Wout van Aert and finishes again in second place with just an amazing, an incredible ride as you just watched him slowly whittle down these riders throughout the course of the race. Bill, what is that what you saw?
Yeah, and I'm just curious if you think that those mechanics, since you guys are the Bike Shop CX guys, do you think that these mechanicals that he's been having recently will go away when, you know, rumor on the street is they're changing bikes to a Canyon come January? So you think all those problems just magically go away then when you get rid of those frames?
I have no confidence in that. I have no confidence in that at all.
And I think it's more drivetrain maintenance related.
Yeah, I think that the thing that it still, and I know I've said it before, but it still just strikes me each time, is that, you know, in the next edition of Skills, Drills, and Bellyaches, I'm going to have a section in there in the best technique for bending over your bike at the waist. You know, where do you put your hand? Where's your saddle position when you're trying to get your chain back into the butt on the bike? Because that is now an essential
cyclocross just like hopping the barriers.
Technique. Yeah, exactly. It used to be
riding the barriers. Or do you reach over from the non-drive side?
Yeah.
lift the bike, turn the crankset backwards.
No, and that's going to be it. It's going to be
the... hand it over into the crowd, right? That's the other way.
You are going to, at the beginning of the season, you're going to work on your dismounts, your remounts, and your replacement of your chain. That's going to be, those are going to be the skills that, you know, you go to cyclocross camps. Those are going to be the skills that you now have to learn.
Here's just something I've been thinking about after watching both of these races this weekend. And I'm not exactly, I haven't come to any conclusions. I'm just rolling this over in my head. And you know who will probably call me out on this is JB Hancock. But here it goes. If you notice in this race, Vanderpool is going through the field like butter, right? Just knocking them down one after the other. But if you want, you know, this new live tracker that the UCI has is really fun to keep up while you're watching the race. And if you were watching that, even though he's knocking these guys off one at a time, his time gap to Wout did not change, right?
Yeah.
It was basically 32 to 35 seconds the whole rest of the race. So, you know, we all sit here and talk about, oh, look, he was just crushing it. Blah, blah, blah. Wout, he was not catching Wout. Wout was maintaining that exact same time gap for the whole rest of the race. So, in my opinion, one of the things, when Vanderpool is pulling away from everybody and even pulling away from Wout, it tends to lead to some erratic bike handling by him. Things like hitting the fence. I mean, he did that again this week, right? Yeah. I can't remember. Was it this race or was it the next race?
It was a Sunday race.
Where he went up on the banners again, right? This is after having his chain come up. This is after hitting stuff, having his wheels slam into stuff. I just think, I'm not taking anything, you know, I think Vanderpool is the best rider in the world. You know, I think he's crushing everybody this year, but I'm rolling this around in my head of seeing that this is the way he can pull away from Wout is when he really has to turn, you know, start being a little bit more dangerous, pushing the envelope a little bit more, getting closer to the edge. And sometimes that can backfire like it did in this race.
Do you think that part of the reason that Wout is struggling to keep up, and maybe he could have even increased his lead over Vanderpool after having this mechanical, is because he's on a slow bike?
Ooh, what do you mean? Slow bike.
So much for the whole felt thing, huh?
he's complaining about his felt bikes being slow.
Oh, I did not see that.
Yeah.
I don't know. Capitan's thinks that they're pretty quick. Or at least maybe earlier in the season.
Maybe she'd be even faster. if she wasn't handicapped with a slow bike.
Now, I'm gonna say no to that. Well, maybe then that's his whole plan, is then when Vanderpool switches, he'll hope that the Stevens is a slow bike too.
Well,
Here's the thing, right? And you know, we don't really talk about it much, but maybe it's time to bring it up. What did Sven do when he got off the Colnago?
Gave it a kiss?
Yeah, he did do that, yes. But, I mean, his results after that. He won one race following that.
And now
young Mr. Wout van Aert goes from a Colnago. And what has his results been?
He won a world championship on a felt.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
Hey, that is good, but he certainly hasn't turned a great season on it. His first full season on a felt has not been screaming felt. And I'm not slamming felt or Trek for that matter. Great bikes, both. But I ride a Colnago, so I have to point that out.
Sven did okay on that bike.
Yeah.
On what, the Trek?
Yeah.
Or on the Colnago?
Well, he beat, you know, he got that Coke side of win. He got some good wins. Here's the.
Oh yeah, I'm sorry, I forgot. Somebody works for with Trek.
I don't work for them.
No, I love all bikes, man. I love all bikes and anybody.
I'm an independent contractor.
There you go.
But the whole slow bike thing then has sparked, of course, a feeding frenzy in the Belgian press. And thank you to, I actually had a, I think it was an Instagram direct message asking me about the slow bike. So thanks to that follower who gave me the heads up because it was I was unaware that this was going on in the cyclocross motherland. But the rumor on the street is that Wout is so unhappy with the team right now and fighting with team management that he's going to be getting signed by Lotto Soudal for the road.
And then stay with Lotto Soudal in cross too?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, what kind of bike do they ride?
I don't know, but he said that's nonsense and it's not happening. So,
Red Lotto.
Yeah, Red Lotto. Not Yumbo.
Well, I hope it's
not Yumbo Lotto. Belgian Lotto.
All right. So, well, I mean, we'll see what happens. I think it was certainly an exciting men's race. It was fun watching Vanderpool come riding through everyone. But it was pretty obvious as you watch it, I think, that he wasn't going to catch Wout.
I'm just happy that the black bibs won over the white bibs.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That's quite true.
I'm sure there was a lot of concern about that.
In particular in that race.
All right. Do you guys want to... Are you done? Do you want to talk any more about it?
Are we done? You notice he has separated himself from us.
I try and throw out like a serious point and it immediately just crumbles.
By asking what means these reasons to you, he has separated himself from us and therefore is not part of us.
No.
Tough race. All right. Tough race for Steven Hyde.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We forgot to mention the American men were in that race. Do you guys? I did not write that down.
Well, Steven Hyde did not finish. Jeremy Duren, who continues to be kind of a crash magnet, so even when Hyde was crashing, he seemed to always be around him. He was down there 56th.
And he was in one of the left side crack. I mean, he was right on that left side and he was down. Yeah, I mean, you could just see him.
It was just the two of them too, wasn't it?
Yeah. Just the two of them. Yeah. So, all right, let's move on to the Veve with Flandre.
Oh, hang on. Marcel Meissen.
Yes.
Top German.
Go ahead, say it.
Top German.
Top German. Yes, I actually did have that.
Oh,
right
and
now,
speaking but. Of Marcel Meissen, the top German, announced today, Philip Walsleben hanging it up.
I saw that. He's going to the road, I heard.
Is that right?
Hitting the road.
Jack. Hitting the road. Literally.
Yeah.
Out of here. Yeah.
Well, that's too bad to see. I mean, he's been a great rider, really fun to watch.
He's at the top of his cyclocross game anymore.
Sure, for sure. I know there was one other thing I wanted to mention. Tone doing a little bit surprise there for Matthew Vanderpool there at the end. Did you guys catch that? I think Vanderpool kind of had resigned to the fact that he was going to get second and kind of was not really pushing really hard. And all of a sudden, there's Tone on his back wheel out of nowhere.
Had to put in a little push there at the end.
Exactly. Like, whoa, where'd he come from? And again, you know, Tone Aert's just showing us that he's one of the guys up there at the pointy end of the field for sure. So,
another little tidbit for the race itself. We had the confetti cannon, even though was not Matthew Vanderpool winning.
Interesting.
I'm just saying it.
It was all yellow, right? Wasn't it?
Oh, those different guys. So it wasn't the Dutch guy.
I think it was a yellow confetti.
The Germans probably did that. They thought that was, you know, it's sort of like how we did it in the U.S. Like that's now something you need to do part of your finish line package.
You got to have start lights and a confetti cannon.
Yeah.
You put it into your budget. It's going to be
when we see the new UCI regulations, that's going to be one of those red lines in there added. Confetti cannon.
You must have, and it's going to define the dimensions of the confetti particles too. Yeah.
And the caliber of the cannon.
The caliber, yes, absolutely. So, all right. Deveve, Flandre Cross. Let's do the quick results here of the juniors and the U23 men. For the juniors, first place was Loris Rullier. Second place was Gerben Kuipers. Third place was Ben Tullett. Fourth place, Luke Verberg. Fifth place, Mies Hendricks. Top American in 12th place was Scott Funston. And in 23rd place was Alex Morton. And in 29th place was Calderwood. And in 30th place was Ben Gomez Villafana.
Did you find?
Yeah. So a little bit. I'm wondering if the American kids kind of were tired after the previous day. Good shot the previous day. And then basically all of them, same similar order, but all just a little bit farther down in the field. So that might be the case. But still, very strong showing. I think, you know, again, the junior field we got is really cool. So, all right, U23, first place was Eli Easerbeat, second place Yannick Peters, third place Thomas Joseph, fourth place Adam Kupalik, fifth place Steen Kalwa.
Sure.
I have no idea if that's right. So, all right, so Easerbeat again taking the win. Again, no Pidcock, so we'll see. I think it's going to come down to the two of them.
And isn't Pidcock off like a training camp?
Something like that. Yeah.
I think I did see that. Yeah.
Yeah. He's at his road training camp.
The U23 race was all one Czechoslovakian rider in the top 13. All the rest were Belgian. So.
And who was the first German?
I was only doing that for the elite field.
We're not in Germany anymore.
Sorry. Who was the first Flandrian?
There you go.
Who was the first Flandrian?
The first Hama.
All right. Well, let's move on to the races that we got to watch. The women's elite race. This race was okay.
Yeah.
Pretty exciting race. The Twitter was going crazy. Everyone was just, lots of exclamation points. I could picture people standing up in their living rooms watching as Ellen Noble and Katie Compton basically led this, two U.S. women led this field around the course until the very end when Sonny Kant said, okay.
Boy, that attack she put in,
that was
something. Because I was sort of like not watching, and I didn't realize I thought there was still a lap to go. I'm like, oh, she's going early. And I didn't realize it was the final lap. And that was like the perfectly executed attack.
She has become quite the tactician at this point.
Yeah. I mean, she had 3 seconds on them. And then it was, then this was probably with like a quarter of a lap to go on the long stretch.
Yeah.
And then it was just over.
One interesting thing, Sonic Kant's winning time after we had that long race, winning time was 39 minutes.
Yeah.
So
they're making it up.
It would have been that. Yeah, exactly. So first place was Sonic Kant, second place, Ellen Noble, third place, Katie Compton, fourth place, Ellen Van Looy, fifth place, Nikki Bramier. For the U.S. in this race, second place was, of course, Ellen Noble. Third place, Katie Compton. 12th was Ellie Anderson. 14th, Clara Hansinger. And 25th place, Laurel Rathburn. Good seeing Laurel in that field. So, just an incredibly exciting race. As good a race as we've seen all year, I think, for sure. And, Sonny Kant basically, I don't know if she was just taking it easy there and just decided at the end, but she certainly looks like the person to beat for the women's field right now.
Yeah. I mean, a couple
comments,
couple notes there. First off, Ellen Noble, of course, amazing. Right. I mean, that's a coming out party right there. Just, she's done well, but just to be racing with Sana, being raced with Catherine Comet, not really a coming out party. We know that she's going to be up there, but she started fourth row. Was able to work her way up pretty quickly to the front of that race. And this was a three-woman race. I mean, Ellen Van Looy is 46 seconds back at the end. So it was really those three were going to decide it. And just a good race between her and Compton. I think why it's coming out, because it's like the head-to-head with her and Compton and her beating Katie Compton. I mean, that's a pretty huge milestone in a super competitive race like that, where Compton's it's kind of going for it. The funny thing is, for Katie, even not winning, she still increased her lead in the Deve.
That was the thing I was going to say. Exactly.
Yeah.
No matter what happened, once it's the three of them, no matter what happens, Helen Wyman, she was going to gain time on Helen Wyman. So at that point, she just, you know, if she sits in and rides with the two of them, she's going to gain in the over. And she gained over a minute in the over. Sonny Khan, of course, had the DNF in one of the Deveve, which means you get plus five minutes. And I think she's down by like over 10 minutes to Katie Compton right now.
Yeah. And for people that don't know, you know, we talk about this. The Deveve is run on time. So it's cumulative time at the end of the series, which is always fun because you just got to keep racing the whole time as opposed to the Super Prestige or World Cup, which is based on points.
Right. And if you get a D and the most you can lose is 5 minutes. So and that was when Khan was having all the stomach problems. So she had to pull out of one of those races.
One thing that we haven't talked about in this race. The a classic in the this will go in, I think, in the top 10 list. For things we can say they don't do that in Europe about, and that would be the Toyo tire barrier, uphill barrier section.
I loved it.
I did too. I liked that. I thought it was
I liked
cool.
that a lot.
David, tell us what exactly it was.
So rather than having a barrier, you know, a wooden plank or stairs,
a log,
which is allowable. They had tires buried in the upright position at about 3/4 of the depth of the tire going across the entire course, which created a really cool kind of situation for all the men were bunny hopping them. Many of the women were as well, but it doesn't create that same level of danger of if you miss it, you're hitting a sharp edge and going down hard. You can actually kind of put your weight back and almost ride over them because they're rounded.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
If you bang, run over it or bunny hop it, than to bang them and ride over them. But
and if you bang your chain ring on the tires, it's not going to do anything, right?
Right. And for people for the orientation, it was like if you were driving a car down the track, it'd be just like a line of tires all down there, like a steamroller. Those would be the tires, and those were just buried all the way down in there. So
there was two rows of them going all the way across the course.
Yeah, so the automobile tires were going the same direction as the bike tires were, but they were just all right next to each other, right across, and then uphill, but at the same sort of split, same distance that you'd have two separate planks.
And yet they were coming at them. Straight up. They were coming at them at an angle, which was kind of cool. And if you think about it, from a logistical standpoint of putting those in, you got to get those right up hard against one another because otherwise you're going to have people riding in and getting their tires pinched between two tires.
Right.
Yeah, I think that only happened one time, which is kind of amazing. Because I think partly because they were hitting them at an angle, right? So they weren't like hitting them straight in between. But I think it was Wout one time got his rear wheel kind of in between two. It just kind of slowed him down for a little bit. He wasn't like stuck and had to dig it out or anything. But I thought it was a cool element. I really liked it. I thought it was awesome. So
I definitely agree with that.
Now we got to see that over here next year, right?
Yeah, and also, you know,
bringing in the little, you got to put those in.
No, I think by Linky Cup we'll have that.
I don't think that
goes
on anymore.
Which tires and what pressure do they have them at?
What were you saying, Bill? You can get a tire sponsor.
Yeah, different, you know, different tire sponsor.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Okay, men's race for Flandre and Cross, first place, returning to his winning ways, Matthew Vanderpoel. Second place, Wout Van Aert. Third place, Michael Vanthernout. Fourth place, Corne Van Kessel. Fifth place, Tom Musen. For the American men in 18th place, Stephen Hyde finishing again. Still was having issues in this race too, wasn't he?
Yeah.
So yeah, just a rough weekend overall for Hyde. I mean, I'm sure, you know, he's going to have much better weekends than this. This just wasn't his weekend. So, Vanderpoel again returns, gets the win. I think at the end there, even though he had that gap on Wout, he wasn't really putting tons of time into him until the end when he started riding crazy, hitting barriers and stuff, again. So, nothing really crazy there, except the other thing we had in this race is the Cornet incident. You guys remember that? The guy in the crowd?
No.
Oh, yeah.
The guy in the crowd.
Armstrong. Remember with the Armstrong climbing that years ago? Well, it wasn't Musette in this case, but it's the same kind of thing where something got his bars from one of the fans on the sideline, and he went down fast and hard.
He's riding along the side close to the fans, and I think it looked like the guy's arm just came out and kind of hit across his arm, which I think pulled his bars and his chest, and just like knocks him down instantly. And he got up and was like kind of bitching at the guy as I didn't see the guy do it. I thought he just hit the fence and was like yelling about the fence or something. But I saw on Twitter, Cornet said the guy actually contacted him and apologized. And he said, yeah, you know, all right, it's over. If it was, you know, it was what it was. It's over. Yeah. The guy apologized. Everything's cool. So, yeah. End of story, but still it made for a pretty spectacular moment there when he's just riding along and all of a sudden he's on the ground. So you're right. That's exactly what I think a lot of people probably thought of right away, David, was the Musette bag with Lance Armstrong, because that's exactly what it looked like.
Yeah.
It is,
Kevin Paul's again at sixth place.
Yeah, he's
is that
like
becoming
he's
the
like,
new Kevin's place.
Yeah, it is. It's like Kevin's times two.
Yeah.
I was gonna ask about what y'all thought if this was this was it for Powell's, or are we going to see a resurgence later in the year?
It certainly seemed like he's kind of dropped off this year, isn't it? It's kind of like almost like he's switched places with Tone. Tone has kind of become the guy who's, although Tone got 10th in this race, he's more consistently like in the higher places that we were seeing Kevin in last year.
It's like
or Michael Vanter now, really.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, the way he rides that everybody loves and that we always thought was great was how steady he was, just always steady. I think he's still steady, but he's like two beats slower steady than he was last season.
Right. I don't know. I hope not. I mean, his racing age according to the UCI site is 33. So you know, I think he could certainly come back and have a great year next year. So, you know,
well,
see what happens.
At the bottom of the wide angle podium was Tom Musin. Is he done? What are you saying about that?
I don't know.
I don't think he's done. I just think he's not. I mean, it's just not. He's not having a great year.
But that's also that's where he's been.
That's true.
Ever since the youth explosion in that field.
Yeah,
that's kind of where he. You know,
but
every
we haven't
now
seen
and then,
him competing at the same level he had been. I
agree. It seems like something is not there with him this year. But yeah, you're right, Billy. You know, maybe we saw him at the beginning of races. We tended to see him up in the mix with the leaders for a little bit.
Yeah.
And then he'd drop off and finish fifth, whereas we're maybe that's not what we're seeing this year.
I think you also have to wait until Christmas, January, and even after Worlds. And this is, I think, what we get sucked into sometimes, because that's when these guys that we haven't seen all year can shine, because the guys at the top are pretty much done. The series, they're wrapped up. Their World Cup's wrapped up. Even World, you know, the Worlds happens first weekend in February. They're racing until the last weekend in February. And all of a sudden, you know, these other guys start sneaking in there and getting on the podiums and getting these wins. You're like, oh, yeah, you know, and then next year we're like, oh, yeah, no, they had a good season. Remember when they won, you know, X, Y, and Z?
I
think that sort of fools us every year into it, but the strength of it is still that Mason hasn't really been competing except now and then for those top spots for a while.
Yeah, really. I mean, I'm going to say this year. I know that January counts as this year. So January through February, technically this year. But for this cyclocross season, the 2017-2018 cyclocross season, fifth place is his best. He's had two fifth place and a couple of sixth place. And that's where he's been competing all year. Other than that, in the 15 to 20 mark.
Yeah. Yeah. So we'll see. We'll see.
Yeah. I mean, we still haven't seen the return of Lawrence Swick, who I guess was, you know, is still getting healthy. So he's a guy that by the time Worlds rolls around, we could be seeing him again. You know, and we're still like, you know, we see these glimmers of good things from Lars Vanderhaar, but then, you know, back in seventh place. So
that's who I was just going to mention too. Yep, I agree. So, all right. Well, we will see what we will see. Anything else you want to talk about the elite men in this race? Are we going to wrap up the Belgian-German stuff and talk about Japan?
We can do that.
Yeah. Bill, okay. Tell us about Japan. I don't have
results. We had a reporter on the beat.
Yeah. We did. That was me.
That was you.
That's right.
Hang on. Let me pull up the results here just so I can.
While you're doing that, if people get a chance, memory. They need to go to Crosshairs TV. Is it Crosshairs TV or television?
It's Crosshairs Television, but it's actually just YouTube.com.
Just the YouTube channel.
/ CXHairs, CXHAIRS. And then I have all of the videos up there chronologically. Just some, you know, just a couple of. Just sights and sounds of the venue and the course setup, and then so far I have recaps of day one races and still working on day two races, and then also I have full coverage of Tim Johnson's first ever Masters race.
I mean, that's just
tape
gold
to tape
right
coverage.
There.
Yeah,
it was, and believe me, he was going tape to tape in that race.
And I gotta say, the opening drone shot of the elite women's race day one.
Yeah,
beautiful.
Oh, it's just wonderful. You have the mountains back there, which are just, you can't beat it for a backdrop, and then where they have the pits, and then it's like this. I don't know. I'll be nice and say it's a dirt field. It's probably more manure in there. It's very Belgian. right in front of the pits, and then it's all fields back, basically all the way to the mountains, which are, you know, 5 kilometers or so away, and it's just stunning. So the guy, yeah. You know, if it weren't for the fact that they were freezing their asses off because it's super exposed in the pit, they get this amazing view just to look at the whole time. But it was really windy on Saturday, and yeah, there were some cold mechanics in there. But there's a road start, and then it's basically this 45 degree left hand turn still on the road that goes to the far back corner of the track. And that whole road is a little more than a false flat. I mean, you're definitely, you know, that you're going uphill, but it's not a lot. I wouldn't call it a climb, but there's definitely a little bit of elevation change that I think worked to some of those riders' advantage. They were calling that the climb. I mean, you know, but it was... As far as the whole course goes, it's pretty much pancake flat, you know.
Yeah.
But what they make up for it is they have, you know, that section right in front of the pit where that dirt field that can, you know, when it was snowing on Friday and early on Saturday with all of the amateur races, it was muddy. I mean, it was super muddy. It started to tack up by the time that the elites got on there, so it wasn't an issue. But if you look back years past there, when there's snow and rain on the ground, it is a messy, messy, messy venue. I mean, it can be just like all out mud. And then from there, they flow back to this sort of fun wooded section that they're pretty much just winding them around all of the trees. So really tricky turns, big flyover that you have to dismount stairs up on the flyover, a couple little tricky berms they have to ride across, and then it's really just, you know, in the front field as well, just sort of serpentining back and forth, got a barrier section, and that's it. So, you know, by the time the men rolled around, they're doing 6-minute laps. I mean, they're doing like 10 laps for that course. Wow. So it was,
hey,
it,
Bill, what was that big circle there? Is that it looks like it wasn't on the course per se. Is that like a horse training paddock or something?
Exactly.
Or,
yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Well, when I was there Friday, I mean, it's a tourist destination. So there's a petting zoo. There are doves there. There's an ATV track with these little mini ATVs that is like a go-kart track, dirt go-kart track.
Nice.
Yeah, so they were racing through that as well, but that was part of the course. And there's like horse riding, and there's like competitive like dog runs, you know, so it's you know, and then all these like little shops and restaurants and stuff. So venue wise, it's a super neat little, you know, really eccentric venue. But yeah, you know, as far as the topography is concerned, not anything super, super technical. They do really well with what they have.
Yeah.
So the question I have for you, Bill, is, what happened to Anthony Clark there on that at the start on the first day?
So, you know, you have that left-hand turn that comes up real fast.
Off the pavement.
Off the pavement. I think he was on the...
It looked like maybe his foot came out of the pedal or
well,
something.
Well, he started... Here's the choice that you have to make, okay? Let's say you are on the front row... And you're the last guy on the front row. Uh-huh. All right. So this is my question to you. What do you do? You're the last guy on the front row. Everybody who lines up from their view, they want to be on the right hand side because that's the farthest away from the turn. So if you're coming down the line, number 8 call up. Do you take that spot?
I take the far spot on the second row.
That's my question. Right. Or do you give up that front row? And go, and you know you're going to be behind the fastest guy if he's the number one call up, and just like give up that last spot and go to the. Well, regardless, Anthony got caught and he knew it. He was on the left side. Chris Jonjouard, who you know, three-time Australian
champion.
If you all don't know him, you will know him. He's the guy that grabbed the wheel.
Jay Blood.
Yep. Yes. In that infamous ending to the Australian Cyclocross Nationals, I think it was that like 2-3 years ago?
Two years ago.
If you haven't seen it, go look it up. It's an amazing YouTube clip. But yeah, I was joking with him about that.
But, that's brave of you. Very brave of you.
Bill, never to lose an opportunity to joke about it.
Yeah.
Well, he was saying something about stuff he doesn't know, and I was just like, we've all seen the video.
And, that's funny.
Yeah, so the guy still races, you know, all out and is an aggressive rider.
Yeah.
So Clark's coming out there so hot out of this start. So hot. He wants that whole shot. And I think he knows he's in a bad spot. So he's trying to work his way to the middle. And the way he's going to do it is basically just burn a match right there, get to the front and get his line. Jonjouard sort of sees that as well, starts going towards the middle. Also, he has the better line. I don't know. Did he chop him? Questionable. But he definitely came into him, definitely cut off his line. I don't know if, you know, what the responsibility is for each rider there. Jonjouard's taking his line through there. Anthony's not giving up any ground. Ends up his front wheel gets pushed by Chris's. And how he did not go down is beyond me.
Yeah. You know? I mean, to me, it didn't look like anything like nefarious or anything. I thought Jonjouard had the line. I didn't think he did anything wrong.
Yeah.
I just think it's one of those situations. There's just too many people trying to all get to the same spot, you know?
Yeah. And then
people rubbing. So,
yeah. And even if that altercation hadn't happened and Anthony didn't have to run his bike to the barriers and get back on, that field's still stopping.
Right.
There's just not enough room for the whole field. And it was a big field to get through there. And it just came to a dead stop at the end of the start.
Yeah. So, All right. Well, yeah, I thought maybe like he had something like he either slipped on the bars or his foot came out of the pedal.
No,
or something
you can
like that,
see,
which
you
maybe
can
happened
see
at the end.
Yeah. No, you can see the contact and his front wheel gets shoved by Jonjouard's rear wheel. It's pretty impressive that he kept that upright.
Yeah.
Jay Blood later gets caught in the fencing himself, doesn't he?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so he's riding the So the other guy out there, big Czech rider, Emil Hekele, never won a UCI race before, always doing these the China races, does the Japan races, sticks around the EKZ, but you know, no real notable results, and but just like just an engine. I mean, just big guy, especially on this course, just like putting out these watts. And John Jordan has a pretty good lead, is the only guy who's riding the planks and just gets it wrong. You know, you can see the aftermath on my video. Unfortunately, I was there like 2 seconds too late and didn't see him actually get it wrong. But he basically, yeah, he screws that up. Kelly passes him, and then he's just, you know, and that's the race. That's the deciding moment in the race. He's never able to get it back. And, yeah, came in second.
Nice. And for the women, some Sammy Runnels, right?
Sammy Runnels having an amazing season. Was this like her third UCI win, I believe?
Yeah.
Of the year.
So.
And just really, and for her, you know, also, you know, the Squid Squad, they're not going to do things conventionally. You know, we got Clark and his crazy start. And Anthony came back and was fourth in that race, you know, so he had a good fight. Him and Yu Takanuchi had a nice battle there at the end. And they had to separate themselves from a pretty big following group. But yeah, so Sammy goes down in the wooded section like hard, like over her bars, screws up her shifter, you know, bike is pretty much... I think that she still was able to ride it in, but, you know, she wasn't shifting.
Oh,
and
yeah.
She gets...
good thing it was a flat course.
Yeah, gets to the pits, doesn't lose a ton of ground, but, you know, the way it worked for them, I think they probably brought four bikes and have three riders.
Yeah.
Just because that's, you know, maybe five, but you know, you just can only travel so much, especially if you don't have a budget. So they're basically sharing. It's nice that they're all pretty much the same size. Kachorik's probably the tallest, of the three. but regardless, so Sammy and Anthony, you know, ride the same size bike. So Anthony's bike was Sammy's B bike. So she did a couple laps on his bike. Which is crazy too, because then I don't know what he was warming up on for his race.
Yeah, good question.
So they must have had like another spare. I don't know what. However,
maybe Chris had a bike
or
there
a felt.
Too.
They were riding a felt,
possibly.
A felt.
Yeah. Regardless, but she. Yeah.
The
so
squids
she,
are way faster than the felt.
That's right. She switched out bikes, was able to fight back on to that lead, and then just basically dusted them once she caught them. I got about a 3-4 second lead and was
and whatever she did to her bike was fixable because she was back on it by the end.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. No, they did a nice job getting her back into her bike, and then it looked like it was going to be a 3-person sprint there for a while, but she was able to break away just at the right at the end and take the win. They got them at the same time. So, but yeah, I'd say she at least had a second on April McDonough.
Right.
Interesting. Another J Blood rider. So another Australian.
April McDonough.
Yeah, April McDonough, who got second on day one, ended up winning on day two. Not only was that her first UCI win ever on day two. When she got second on day one, it was her second UCI race ever.
Wow.
So she podiumed.
Man, she didn't do the ones in Australia.
She was not. She had like another commitment that weekend. Did not race Fields of Joy. This is her first time racing outside of Australia. It's almost like a Evie Richards type story. First time racing outside of Australia. Gets on the podium of a UCI race. Day one, and then wins it going away on day two.
Nice.
Yeah, she won by almost a solid minute.
Yeah,
so.
And not young either. I mean, she's been racing bikes, just not cyclocross. And coming into
her racing age is 30. So.
Yeah, coming into it, and she's strong. She's one that, you know, if she continues to travel and race, she's going to be one to watch. I think, you know, is she going to be racing for the top of these big races? Probably not, but top 10-ish, I think she will definitely be there.
Yeah. And then I just got to throw in also from Australia, and in 10th was Fiona Morris, my buddy. Her and I were pitting at the World Cups together.
Oh, nice.
At the beginning of the season. So, yeah, Gary Milburn's wife. So
Yeah. And Gary had a nice race as well. You know, I think he wanted to do a little better, but it was definitely in there in that fight in the chase group.
And then Jungle War gets the win for day two.
Yeah, day two. He was not messing around. It was pretty much from the start. He was gone. Yeah.
Cool. All right, man. Well, good recap, Bill. It was a good trip, sounds like, overall, and you're going to go back to Japan again at some point?
Yeah, I'd love to. I think it's a great vibe. It's the kind of stuff that I think that we not only strive for, we have accomplished in the U.S., especially at the C2 and a level, but it does remind me of the U.S., say, 5 or 6 years ago, where you went to all of these newer C2 race, and this isn't a new race. This race has been around forever, but just the vibe of it. You had so many teams, local teams out there that stick around for the whole time. They're cheering for their own teammates. They're having fun. They're drinking beer. They're, you know, cooking out. It's just a really, really good vibe there. And then they're sticking around for the elite races. And that's kind of, and I know, you know, we all three of us have talked about it. It's something that is this little niggling little fear that I think we have in the back of our heads that we get to these elite races in the U.S. now and people are, for whatever reason, are starting to lose interest in them and they're going home. And I know that's always been a case for a bit, but it seems like it's more now.
David and I talked about this a little bit in Indy, and one of my feelings on it is, I don't know that this idea that you save the elite races to the end of the day is necessarily a good idea. I think maybe you consider running your elite races when the most people are going to come, because no one really wants to be standing out in a field at 5:30 in the dark almost on a Sunday.
Yeah.
Just because
I think if you're
going
to do that, you have to commit to 3 or 4 races earlier. There's always when you hear that argument, a lot of times what you hear is put your B race at the end of the day. And it's like the B dudes are always the ones that get thrown under the bus. It's like, and then they'll stick around and watch the elite race. And my whole thing is like, they're not going to watch the elite race. They're going to be by their car on their trainer warming up.
So you're cleaning up mud or whatever.
Yeah, your crowd isn't going to increase at all. You're just going to make it so that those guys won't be the ones who are then grabbing a beer and watching the elite race because they're going to be getting ready to race. So if you're going to do that, if you're going to commit to that, put it like at noon.
Right.
And then you can have some of those amateur races that can actually watch the race, then go warm up, then go do their race. And they're not going to be freaking out that I can't watch this race because I won't be able to do my prep for my own race.
Right.
But but just doing like one race or two race, I think that you're almost holding those people hostage to watch the elite race. And I just don't know if that's the answer either.
Yeah. I just think the elite race at the end of the day on Sunday in the U.S., it's a ghost town. They're ghost towns. Yeah.
But
there's nobody around.
It's the makeup of the sport. You know, it's like, since it's not a professional sport, we're not having races at, you know, we're not only having 4 races on the day like they are in Belgium.
Yeah.
What's the solution, David?
I don't know. We put our elite men midday for Matt Anthony this past year, and it was certainly better than we had it than in the past when we had it at the end of the day.
I agree.
I think the UCI issue is a different issue in a lot of ways. But for community USAC style racing, I think you want to put on the show, right? You want people to stay there. You want your bigger races. And that's kind of what we did. We have our bigger races. The men's 4-5 start the day, and the men's 5 end the day. Those are our biggest 2 races. So it kind of stinks for your fives that want to race both the 4-5 and the 5. But it tends to be the largest group. Obviously, they're the newest to the sport and the ones that are still really kind of geeked by it and really enjoying it for the whole day. They're not quite the glazed over older guys that are kind of just out there because they want to make the podium and make a payday and get paid so much money to race their bike.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I don't know if we'll solve this today, you guys. What do we got coming up for this weekend? We've got NBX in Warwick, Rhode Island, and Ruts and Guts, the last C1 in the U.S., Broken Arrow, Oklahoma. So here's my question. Is there going to be any publications in the U.S. that talk about cyclocross saying that the East Coast riders that stay on the East Coast and race NBX are sandbagging? Like you about the West Coast riders that stay on the West Coast when there's a C2? Think we'll see that?
I don't know. It's a good point.
I doubt it. I highly doubt it. But no, good fields and all of it. I think NBX is like 1,200 riders or something already. Yeah. So yeah, that's going to be a huge event. So, but yeah, that's what we got to see. And that's it. That's like the whole race weekend. So there is nothing that we'll be watching. I don't think no streaming of anything. Do you guys know anything else coming up?
I'll Facebook Live the Ohio race for you, Scotty D. At least for John Card's race, you can see him racing.
Yes, absolutely.
He's been having quite the season, John Card has.
Yes. So, all right. Well, anything else you guys want to talk about?
No, I think we should save our yens. That can be like our special episode 100. We'll just talk about yens decorations.
Oh, yeah. Good idea. Good idea. Since we'll just have the two U.S. races for next week. So, all right, Bill, if people want to get in touch with you on social media, what's the best way to do it?
Well, they can come out to Lake Fairfax Park and see me at Cap Cross Classic this week and actually getting back and announcing a race. It's I haven't done that in a while, so that'll be good.
Your first one this year, though, is it?
No. I did did a slew of them early on and then took off. Gotcha. But that is our Bike Reg Super Series final race. So I will be handing out cash to some series winners and having our, I like to call it our office party, our holiday office party for the Bike Reg Super Series. It's happening on Sunday.
Nice.
And other than that, you know, at CX Hairs on Twitter and on Instagram. But my big plea right now, and you can get all the stuff, you just go to cxhairs.com. I have a post up there from Nobayama right now, but go to the YouTube channel, go to youtube.com/cxhairs and subscribe to that, and then you'll get a little notice about, if you want notifications, that I have new videos up. I'm really trying this new style that Scott was talking about. I started it, doing it more of a Svenness style, now moved over just to the voiceovers to try to give you guys more recap. My goal is, instead of just giving you highlights without context, to put some context into the highlights for these domestic races. And in this case, you know, if I'm at the race, like this Japanese race, so you know what's going on, you know what the lap count is, you know what the race situation is. And hopefully that's a little more interesting to work through. There, you know, 6-7 minutes of just race highlights and recap. So those are called crosshairs.
The only complaint I have, Bill, is they're too long.
Yeah.
No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, so those are...
That was like every Svenness video. Oh, everyone was like, oh, they're too long. Oh, too long.
That, and even when I was doing the other ones, when I started again, it was like the music. So I felt like, there's a little bit of a music bed down in there just so it sort of adds to the environment, but then it's ambient sound and then just me yapping on top of it. But those are crosshairs television. Go subscribe to those.
Perfect link.
Only other thing that I will say is that, you know, holiday season, I have I have books still available. You know, in the next week or so would be the best time to order those if you want to give them to your cyclocross friends. cyclocrossbook.com. It's skills, drills, and belly aches. It's a skills and techniques cyclocross book. I think it's good for beginners, and even if you've been racing for a while, you can still get something out of it. It's Jeremy Powers, Bruce Buckley took all the photos. You know, we got tips in there for Powers. We sort of go through everything that you need to know to improve your cyclocross race times without actually getting in better shape.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
David.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Where can people get in touch with you?
Hey, again, I'm also doing Cap things myself, Cap City. I'll be announcing down in Ohio, as we were talking about, for the Ohio State, age group championships. And come by, see me there. I'll be working with my friend Spencer Hackett, calling his race. Also, I am on Instagram and on the Twitter at Mr. David Palin.
All right.
And hey, you can listen to me. I'm on this little podcast called, occasionally, I'm on this little podcast called Bike Shop CX.
Yeah, occasionally.
Sometimes they record without me, but in general.
Yeah, I noticed you didn't share the link this week, too. That was good.
Couldn't bring myself to do it. I didn't? I thought I did. I thought you can commented something about it.
You can get a hold of me, Scott Dienbeck. I am not announcing this weekend, but I am doing all kinds of stuff. And you can get me on Instagram at Bike Shop CX. Did you guys catch that?
Ooh,
Instagram.
All right. Yeah.
Instagram, whoa. Bike Shop CX is now. It, yeah.
Do I have
baby.
To refollow something else, or will I automatically
no, I just,
port
I
it
just
over?
Switch. Just okay. switch the good. Name. Yeah. Right. Yeah. So all the followers are still there. So, and on the Twitter sphere at Bike Shop CX or at Cyclocross Net. All right, guys. I think it was another successful show. Bill, you're going to have to do an intro because we didn't do an ad for
yeah,
Health IQ.
I will do the intro to tell you all about Health IQ. Also to tell you about the Bike Kinetic 6-6 Cyclocross race that's happening a couple weeks from now. And about the Wide Angle Podium Podcast Network. But you'll hear about all of that like an hour and 15 minutes ago.
Wide Angle app. Get the app.
Yeah.
App away.
Later, guys.
Bye-bye. Bye.